and welcome to the Rural Perspectives podcast. I'm Adam Albrick with Ag Country Farm Credit Services, and today I'm pleased to be joined by Ashley Coles, who serves as the Executive Director of the Minnesota State Cattlemen's Association. Welcome, Ashley.
Thank you.
And I should also say, welcome to National Beef Month. For those listening along, May, of course, is National Beef Month, and that's where we're going to begin. Ashley, are you doing anything to help celebrate or promote the industry this month?
Yeah, so I guess with the Minnesota State Cattlemen's Association and with the Minnesota Beef Council, we obviously promote beef year-round, and not just beef, but also our cattle producers, our beef producers. We work year-round to, you know, promote what they do on the farm, but also to promote the product to consumers. But it's not really out of the ordinary of what we do all year.
Now, just to give listeners some perspective, there are nearly 1 million cattle and calf operations across the country. Mm-hmm. The average herd size is roughly 40 head, and the U.S. produced over 25 billion, with a B, pounds of beef in 2016. What is your take on the current state of the U.S. beef industry?
You know, I think the state of the U.S. beef industry is fantastic. Cattlemen are resilient. We have gone through some market volatility issues within the beef industry, but I think for the most part, the beef industry has somewhat rebounded. There's a lot of cattlemen across the state and across the country that have made money in the last year, which isn't a luxury they've had for the past few years. And so I think they're investing that money wisely, a little bit in herd expansion, but also just on infrastructure within their farms. So I think the state of the beef industry is good.
And is that the same trend that's happening here in Minnesota?
Absolutely. We are hearing of some expansion of cow herds, but also of feeding facilities. For the feeding facilities, more so in the central part of the state and in the southwest and the southeast. And then obviously up north is where we have the highest concentration of cow-calf operations. And so hitting up bull sales this spring, there's a lot of folks talking about herd expansion within the northern part of our state. So I'd say, yeah, growth across the state of Minnesota is good.
Now, you obviously work a lot with the animals themselves, but I have to ask, what's your favorite cut of beef?
Oh, that's a really hard question because it's very situation dependent, right? So if I'm at home, I always like to think that, you know, the best steak that I could have or prepare is one that I actually get to grill. I'm the griller in our household. I grew up in a family that participates in contest barbecue. So when it comes to cooking meat over fire, that is my domain, right? So it's, for me, it's hard to pass up a good porterhouse or a good T-bone. They're my favorites if I'm actually grilling the piece of meat. But if I go out, if we go to a restaurant, I have a hard time not ordering the filet. In a restaurant, that's my favorite. But then if you're going to, you know, fast food or just a generic restaurant, you know, a good cheeseburger is pretty hard to pass up. So again, it's hard for me to pick. I like all things beef.
Well, that's good considering your job.
Right.
Now, you and your husband run and own your own beef operation. Could you tell us a little bit more about your own farm?
Yeah, so as far as beef operations go, I would consider us to be pretty diversified. That being, we have a cow herd, right? So we have some registered Black Angus cows, but we also calve out what they call short-term cows. So we get cows in from western South Dakota that can no longer graze for various reasons. Maybe it's their age, maybe it's a temperament issue, or maybe they don't have the best udder anymore. And so we get in a couple hundred of those every spring and we calve them out. And that calf is what we'll call a terminal calf. So we'll put the calf in the feedlot once we wean them and we'll turn the cow into a white fat cow and market her as a cull cow. And then we also have the feedlot. So a couple of those pens are dedicated to the calves that we calve out and then to those mama cows and then feeder cattle fill the balance of them.
It is my understanding that you two got started at a young age, correct?
We did, yeah. Yes, right out of college, actually.
Now, having started so early, what advice would you have for a young person who might be thinking about starting up their own herd?
Yeah, so there are a few things that we had to learn along the way. It hasn't always been easy. We haven't been able to go on the big fancy vacations or drive the nice vehicles just because we made that choice really early on that we wanted to build up the cattle side of the operation to a point where we could thrive and then be a more meaningful part of the overall family operation. So for us, you know, we did it in small chunks. So we started off, we bought the farm that we currently live on, and we converted the hay shed into a feedlot and converted a few other barns to be functional for what we needed them to be. And then we made the leap to build our first monoslope barn. And that was a hard decision. decision for us to make, because it was a lot of money for us, and we didn't have a lot of equity built up in the farm yet. So we built that, and we were fortunate that at that point in time, the beef industry was really strong and people were making a pretty significant amount of money on the cattle feeding side of things. We were able to expand. We doubled the size of the monoslope about 3 years later, and that's where we're currently at right now. And for us, you know, having a strong relationship through that farm business management side of things for financial planning was very important for us, and I think very beneficial for us. But also having other key members of our management or planning, I guess, team, you know, our banker was very important for us. Having that strong relationship and, you know, not necessarily having a banker that says yes to everything that we want, but one that will actually help us make sound financial decisions going forward has really gotten us to where we are. And then a supportive family. Craig and I have been supportive of each other and very upfront, open about what our goals are for the farm and for our family. And so for us, that was really important as well.
Has your own personal experience farming helped you in performing your duties with the Cattlemen's Association?
Yeah, so, you know, for me, I work for cattlemen for my off-farm job, but I also am a cattleman in my day-to-day life. And so a lot of the priorities that we have for the Cattlemen's Association are personal for our members, but they're also personal for me. So when I'm representing the Minnesota State Cattlemen's Association, whether it be in any public setting, talking to consumers, but also when we're talking to legislators, it is a personal story. I'm telling my personal story, but I'm also telling the story of cattlemen across the state and also across the country, depending on the setting. And so I think it's been helpful having the direct tie to the beef industry, representing the beef industry and representing the members of our state Cattlemen's Association.
What would you say is your favorite part about farming and ranching?
Again, that's a hard question to answer. You know, I like it all, and it's seasonal. Again, you know, so in the spring of the year, I love calving season. You know, it's a lot of fun. The kids love calving season. It's a lot of work, and you're tired. But, you know, once all the calves are on the ground and you get into cropping, you get the cattle out on grass and get them situated there. Then you get in the field and you start planting. I enjoy that part of it as well. And then throughout the summer, you know, it's kind of making sure that the animals out on grass are doing well and that the pastures are in good shape and managing the crop. And then fall, I really like silage harvest season. That's probably my favorite part of fall is silage. And then on our farm, I do all the baling. So all the corn stalks, all the hay. So that's, again, something that I enjoy. You know, once we get the baler hooked up to the tractor, I can kind of do my own thing. So I get to take ownership of that specific side of it. So I guess I like it. I like it all.
We are speaking with Ashley Coles, Executive Director of the Minnesota State Cattlemen's Association. Ashley, there are a number of issues impacting agriculture right now, such as trade, renegotiating the farm bill, the ever-present disease control on the animal side of things, and so on. What's the most pressing issue that you're hearing about within the beef community?
The most pressing issue, you know, right now, it seems almost by the hour trade rhetoric kind of changes, right? Whether it's something that cattlemen like or don't like, or even across the agriculture spectrum. International trade is probably the hot topic for the beef industry or agriculture. When you look at the beef industry specifically, international trade accounts for over $300 worth of value for every animal that's sold. And so it's a big deal for us. And making sure that the current trade agreements that we have, you know, are maintained. We keep telling folks, do no harm to the beef side, especially of NAFTA. But a few months ago, talking about CORUS was important as well. We were pretty disappointed when the U.S. pulled out of TPP, simply because that Pacific Rim is where a lot of U.S. beef goes, and Minnesota beef specifically goes to the Pacific Rim. So some of the tariff negotiations into those areas with TPP were unprecedented for the beef industry. And so we're constantly talking about maybe seeing what we can do for unilateral trade agreements with those countries, but maybe even getting back into TPP would also be something that we would welcome. Other issues that we're always talking about, environmental issues, making sure that our state and federal regulatory agencies really do fully understand what we do and some of the rules that they try to implement or how they interpret some of the rules when it comes to enforcement. If they don't fully understand what we do and why we do it, and also understand the fact that as cattlemen and as farmers, we rely on the environment for us to be successful. And so for us to deliberately harm the environment doesn't make any sense. So making sure that narrative is heard is also something that's pressing.
What is your message to elected officials when you meet with them regarding foreign trade? You mentioned do no harm. What's your ultimate goal of that, and what are you telling them?
So I guess we talk about the economy when it comes to, you know, as I had previously mentioned, how much of the value of every animal is tied to international trade, and making sure that they understand that for some people, that's the difference between making money and going out of business. I mean, $300 per animal is a lot of money. And so we continually tie it back to the economy and the impact that the beef industry has, and making sure that we keep livestock in our state, in our countries, just because it's so vital to rural communities to have livestock.
You mentioned it can be very difficult to break into some of those markets. And it seems like anytime there's been a disease outbreak within the livestock industry, foreign countries use that as justification to really close out on trade and protect their domestic farmers. How hard is it to reestablish a foreign market after an event like that?
I would say it's pretty difficult, but when you look at what the U.S. has done too, I mean, we're no different when it comes to protecting the home herd, right, from foreign animal diseases. And this is actually a pretty relevant topic right now, talking about the Farm Bill. Foot and Mouth Vaccine Bank is, I would say, the number one priority for the cattlemen and livestock groups in the Farm Bill. Currently, the Foot and Mouth Vaccine Bank that we have is shared with Canada and Mexico, but the U.S. portion of that FMD vaccine bank is not adequate enough, just to put this in perspective, to vaccinate all of the livestock in Rock County, Minnesota. I mean, that's how inadequate the current vaccine bank is. So sharing that narrative and giving them that perspective, I think, helps a lot, that it doesn't even cover one county. How are we supposed to cover the entire United States? But when we tie that back to international trade, there are a few things that are important. So if we have a plan, like a foot and mouth vaccine plan in place, there are some countries that would be more apt to keep their border open if we do have an FMD outbreak in the United States. And so we're currently working with our Board of Animal Health and Department of Ag and other ag groups to develop that plan for the state of Minnesota. Those are meetings that are happening right now as we speak. And it's not just the beef industry, it's all livestock sectors, but we're also pulling in our grain folks as well, because without livestock, they wouldn't have a very strong market as well. So it's very important to have a good plan and to practice that plan, and we have plans to do just that.
Now, as you mentioned, the Farm Bill is currently being renegotiated as we speak and as of this recording. Outside of the vaccine bank, are there any other major issues that the beef industry is really hoping to see with this Farm Bill?
Yeah, so the other priority for us falls underneath the conservation title. So programs like EQIP are important to cattle producers, especially young cattle producers who are looking to kind of go off on their own or start within the beef industry. That gives them some support in doing that. When we talk about CRP, we're not advocating for an increase in CRP acres, though if that is something that happens, we want grazing to be a more meaningful part of management within CRP, and also being able to tie conservation programs to land coming out of CRP, like being able to leverage EQIP dollars to fence land that is coming out of a CRP contract for grazing. Those are all things that we're talking about in the conservation title. The research title, again, is something that's pretty important for us as well. When we're looking at antibiotic alternatives, having solid research funding for that, and also for something that Secretary Perdue actually just talked about within the last week or so, research for alternative vaccines for FMD is something that's pretty important for us as well.
Now, you mentioned the grazing portion of conservation. That's kind of a really neat topic that I feel like hasn't been really explored in the past. But as we take a look and go forward with these types of sustainability projects within agriculture, how big of a role can animals, livestock, beef play in these types of sustainability practices?
I think they play a very important role. Soil health, you know, it's kind of like sustainability. It's a new buzzword that's going around. And the state of Minnesota specifically, we like to talk to folks in regulatory agencies like the DNR for state-owned land. So if you have grassland that's not maintained with anything but fire, you have specific trees that come in that are not conducive to the wildlife that they want to have on those specific pieces of publicly owned land. So if we can bring cattle in to graze it, it helps with soil health. so that grass isn't just sitting there and turning into a monoculture. It helps with diversity of the grass. It also helps with wildlife on those specific pieces. So if you go back, way back with buffalo and deer and all of that kind of stuff, they grazed. And when they moved over the soil, they also churned the soil. And when they're grazing, not all of the grass is at the same length all the time. And so when you think of nesting birds like pheasants, they need varying stages of grass for nesting, and grazing does that, fire does not. Another hot topic, I guess, right now when it comes to publicly owned land or conservation are bees and butterflies. And so a lot of these grasslands are homes to some of these bees and butterflies. And we've asked these agencies, you know, what happens to that bee and that butterfly when you burn off some of these pieces of land? And they don't survive that. But when you graze, those bees and butterflies do survive that. Through some of the ditch mowing conversations that we've had in St. Paul, we've gotten to be pretty good allies with our pollinator and honey people. And they also like grazing, because if you have, let's say you have a pot of flowers on your front step and you have flowers that die, you deadhead those flowers and more flowers come. So when you have an animal grazing land, it's kind of a similar thing where you're grazing off some of the grasses and the vegetation that has bloomed, and new blooms come for the bees and the pollinators. So it all kind of works together. As you said, sustainability is important. And I think livestock is very much, and again, specifically cattle, are very important to that. We also are able to graze land where you can't grow crops. And so if you look at the landscape in Minnesota, especially in the northern part of the state where there's more trees and there's more lakes and more meandered land, you know, livestock and cattle fit in really well in that type of landscape.
What has the reaction been, or the reception been, to this idea from governmental agencies that you've worked with?
So the Minnesota DNR is actually very supportive of grazing. I guess where we kind of run into a roadblock is with hunters. They don't fully understand that when we have cattle out and graze some of these publicly owned pieces of land, that they will see direct benefit of pheasants, more pheasants within a year or two down the line. And so we have focused a lot of our efforts on educating hunters and the public of why there's cattle out on this land, their favorite piece of public hunting land. And I think we're actually making strides. You know, we talk to folks like Pheasants Forever and other hunting groups, and they're understanding and they're helping us share that message. So it's not just talking to agencies about that specifically, but also the general public and those who want to hunt, saying, hey, you know, it's what's good for you is good for us, it's good for this piece of land. And I think we're actually making pretty good headway.
Now, before we wrap up, I just have to leave it at this. For those consumers who are listening, and for those farmers who are maybe considering switching to beef, the ultimate question, why beef? Why should consumers eat beef, and why should they possibly look into raising beef?
Well, the question should be answered with a question is why not, right? No, I guess if I look at it from a personal angle for our family specifically, entering into the beef industry was a way for us to enter into the family farm. For young folks, you know, trying to acquire land, whether you're renting it or purchasing land, is a hard thing to do, right? It's not always readily available. You can't just buy the neighbor's land when you want to, and you can't always cash flow it as well. You know, crop prices haven't been the best, and so the cash flow side of things are difficult. So for us, you know, we were able to purchase a farm where we can retrofit some buildings to put beef cattle in, right? So it's income units for us to work our way into the family farm. And when you drive through Minnesota, you do see a lot of empty buildings. And so I think that's an opportunity for a lot of folks to enter into the family farm, or give them something to come home to be a part of the family farm. But also for those who are solely crop farmers, I also think it gives them an opportunity for diversification for times like right now, where margins on the cropping side of things are not good. So there's some diversification for your farm. When it comes to fitting beef into what we consider to be a healthy diet, you know, there are options there. We also like to talk about how beef in the state of Minnesota and across the U.S. is raised with pride and handled with care. So you are supporting family farmers in your neighborhood and across the state and across the country by purchasing beef, and just at the end of the day, it tastes good. So why not?
And finally, for those who are interested, where can they go to see more additional resources on the state cattlemen, or find out more facts about beef in general?
Yeah, so we have a website. So www.mnsca.org is our website. So we do keep a lot of information there. You could also follow us on social media. We do have a Facebook and Twitter account. But let's say that you have beef in your freezer and you're not sure how to prepare it. You can go to beefitswhatsfordinner.com and type in that cut of beef, or you can look up ground beef recipes, and there is a plethora of options to fit your family. So if you want to find a new favorite recipe, that's a great place to go.
Ashley, thanks for stopping by and chatting with us today.
Thank you.
That's Ashley Coles, Executive Director of the Minnesota State Cattlemen's Association. That's a wrap for this episode of the Rural Perspectives Podcast, which is a production of Ag Country Farm Credit Services. To get more great content, please visit www.agcountry.com.